Good evening. This is Outbeat Radio host Greg Moralia. Before we begin tonight's program, the entire Outbeat Radio team wants you to know that we're committed to providing you original programming every Sunday night throughout the current health emergency. We are all working hard to produce programs from our home while sheltered in place, and while we recognize the sound quality might not be perfect, we think delivering you news and fresh content is more important. Thanks. And now here's Outbeat Radio's Living Proof with Sheridan Gold and Dr. Diana Greer.
Outbeat Radio on KRCB Windsor Santa Rosa, a program that focuses on issues by, for, and or about members of the gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgender communities. You can hear Outbeat Radio every Sunday night at 8 p.m.
This is Living Proof, and we're your hosts. I'm Dr. Diana Greer, and next to me is my wife and co-host, Sheridan Gold. Tonight in studio, we have a very special guest. We have Lucy Wilkes in the house. Yes. Last month, we had 2 out of 4 of her children were our guests, Dennis and Jenny. Now we have their mom. Hello, Lucy.
Hi, how are you?
Great to have you.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for being here, Lucy.
Okay.
Now, we have lots of questions, like, what was it to have 3 of your 4 kids come out as LGBTQ, or what was it like to organize and head the local PFLAG group in your town, or how was it for your 4th child who is straight, or how was it for your husband? I mean, we have tons of questions.
Okay.
yeah, we have questions and more, but right now, we're going to have our wonderful member, Outbeat member, and our engineer, Greg Moralia, for news and events.
I'd love to change the world, but I don't know what to...
This is Greg Moralia with your Outbeat Radio news for the week of April 5th, 2020. A gay man who went to the Miami-based winter party earlier this month has died from the COVID-19 virus. At least 6 other people who were at the winter party got the virus shortly afterward, but Israel Carraris is the first known death among circuit party goers. He was 40 years old and had no underlying health issues. The winter party is an LGBTQ circuit party that thousands of revelers from all over the world attend each year, and it's a fundraiser for the National LGBTQ Task Force. And this year it was held from March 4th through the 10th, after the CDC was already asking the events with more than 250 people to either cancel or proceed with cautions. Carraris' partner, Franco Conquista, said that Carraris started showing symptoms of coronavirus shortly after the winter party. Conquista is in quarantine because he too has the coronavirus, although his symptoms are less severe. He said, quote, "Just want to let people know that this is serious. They need to stay at home. It doesn't just kill old people. This poor boy was only 40 years old. It can kill anybody, so just stay at home and think about other people. Just try to save people's lives. Just because you aren't affected directly doesn't mean that people are not suffering from this," end quote. And in New York, Lorena Borjas, a Queens-based transgender activist and community leader who provided unstinting social support for trans folks, sex workers, and others, died in the early morning of March 30th after suffering from the coronavirus. Borjas was 59 years old and a native of Mexico, and she became a revered figure in her neighborhood of Jackson Heights, but her impact extended far beyond the confines of Queens. Borjas emerged as an icon for the broader transgender community thanks to her dedication to uplift generations of marginalized folks through her deep compassion for others. Cecilia Gentile, a close friend of Borjas, said, quote, "It's such a dark day for all of us." Borjas had moved to the U.S. in her early 20s and became an unwavering advocate for others while facing steep hurdles in her own life. And in San Francisco, organizers of this year's Frameline Film Festival announced last week that the Frameline LGBTQ Film Festival, usually held in June, will be postponed this year due to the coronavirus outbreak. Executive Director James Woodley announced that the film festival is now slated for sometime in the fall, although no dates have been identified. According to their news release, Frameline is the longest-running, most widely recognized queer film festival in the world. Frameline will also be expanding its film offerings throughout this year and is working on innovative ways to celebrate Pride in the month of June. San Francisco Mayor London Breed acknowledged the difficult decision organizers had to make. Last Monday, Breed announced that the city's shelter-in-place order would be extended to May 1st. And finally, here locally, our hearts go out to everyone at the Santa Rosa Police Department for their loss of Detective Mary Lou Armour, who was taken from us last week by the coronavirus. For a calendar of LGBT events happening here in the North Bay, go to gaysonoma.com. For Outbeat Radio News, I'm Greg Moralia.
And if you just joined us, this is Living Proof with Diana and Sheridan. In studio, we have Lucy Wilkes, mother of last month's guests, Dennis and Ginny. Thank you for taking your time out of your busy schedule to join us in studio tonight, Lucy.
It's nice to be with you. Thank you.
Yeah, so why don't we go ahead and start by you telling us just a little bit about yourself.
Oh, okay. I was born in Clinton, Oklahoma. And my dad graduated from Oklahoma State University in agriculture for poultry. So in 1947, when he heard that there was an opening with the farm advisor for poultry here in Sonoma County through the University of California Extension Service, then we moved here in 1947. I went to school here all through school and graduated from Santa Rosa High when Santa Rosa High School was the only high school before, only public high school before they started Montgomery. Then Harold and I married and moved to, we went together for 2 years. We moved to South San Francisco because he worked for PG&E and his office was near the Cow Palace. So when we lived there, I got a job as a typist and secretary. And after 2 years, we had our first child and moved to Rona Park. We thought that was a good place to start out, buy a home, and raise our four children. And it is a really good place to raise a family. At that time, it was small and everyone knew everybody and everyone had children. So it turned out to be a good atmosphere for everyone.
So was it always in like sections, the A section, the, you know, the alphabet sections?
Yes. Huh? We moved to A section when that was the only section. And our backyard looked out over a big field. You could see actually there's a little airstrip back there. Sonoma State wasn't built yet, so.
Wow. That's interesting. You're giving us a very nice picture of historical Sonoma County, Santa Rosa area that, yeah, that we didn't know about.
I like to garden. And so since Roanoke Park was a seed farm, the soil was very fertile. You could just grow so many things. And it was really nice. And then we moved into another section as our fourth child came along. We moved to a B section. We went from A to B. I was home with the children and I babysat other people's children until my daughter was in third grade, then took a job as a teacher's aide for a reading specialist at La Fiesta Schools. And I love that. I love working with children. I love to be around children, obviously, having four. Uh-huh. But so I was teacher's aide until Jenny, my youngest, was 16, starting to drive. My oldest was starting college, so we needed to have a little better income. So I started to work at a bank as a teller. And then I became opening account representative, and I loved working at the bank, loved working with people and at different times in their life when they needed a little advice or help. And so I worked there for many, many years. And when we moved to Oklahoma in 1994 to look after my parents, that was when the kids were all grown. I worked for a bank there. And then I retired and we moved back to Santa Rosa. That's where I was raised. And so we've been here in Santa Rosa now for 11 years.
Wow, what a journey.
Yes, I knew they would be stubborn and wouldn't come here. So we went there to kind of help them out. And my straight son lived in Oklahoma. And he went to, three of my children went to Oklahoma State University, actually. They would visit and my parents would show them around the school. And it was really it's a beautiful school. Mm-hmm. And they were interested in going. So three of my children graduated from Oklahoma State. So
did they have any pressure to do that from grandma?
No, but they said they would help out financially, and that was a big plus.
That's a huge plus. That's really great.
Yeah. And they are all happy that they did that. It was a small town. Stillwater is about 40,000 people. So it was a nice college town that was very supportive of the school. So
you kind of glossed over that you started with your first kid and then you had your fourth kid. It's like, so how was it? You had four kids. You say you love children. So tell us some things about your children as you were raising them with your husband, Harold. And three of your four kids are gay now or LGBT. So tell us a little bit about how that was for you as far as when they were young. Did you notice anything? Like, fill us in. Let us into your life a little bit.
Okay. I didn't notice anything, actually. It was when my oldest son started college and I started working for the bank that when he graduated from college, he had a hard time accepting being gay. And so it was actually one of his siblings that kind of hinted that he would be gay. And so I would try to talk to him when he came home and he would kind of avoid the discussion. But it was easy for me to accept. And my husband was okay with that. I think by the third child coming out, though, it was getting a little tough for my husband. And there was a little bit of working out to do, but he loves his children. And, you know, that is always the positive thing. You love your children. And so whatever happens, you're going to stand by them, you know. Uh-huh. And it was my second son, Keith, went off to the army. Then he's a straight one. Then he went to college. Then he went to law school in Oklahoma and married. And he has one son. And we're really happy about having a grandson. all of the family gloat over the one grandchild who just got married. He's 23 this last summer. So,
is Keith in Oklahoma? Is that where
yes.
he lives, his family?
Yes. Uh-huh. He's just outside of Tulsa. He's an attorney there in Tulsa. And then Dennis, our third son, who's gay, actually, he moved to Los Angeles. And he married for 3 years. And when he got a divorce, he didn't say why he was getting a divorce. And I thought, oh, that's such a shame. You know, we liked Sharon a lot. But I thought, well, if it's not going to work out, I have to support him, you know. So after he divorced, he shared with her, though. So she would be clear what was going on. But we didn't know. So he moved to LA, and then after a while I thought, you know, actually he's the more one that maybe you could kind of guess that would be gay. And I said to my daughter, and she hadn't come out yet. I said, do you think that Dennis is gay? And she's, oh, I don't know. And so time went on. And once again, I said to Jenny, I wonder if Dennis is gay. And she told Dennis, he says, okay, tell her, you know. So she said, yes, Dennis is gay. And I said, okay, that makes sense now. So that was okay. And
so Dennis had Jenny tell you, not him?
Yeah, but he was good about being more open about everything, you know, after I talked to him. So,
oh, that's good. Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I guess it's really hard. You know, you would think that I was hard to talk to. I'm really not. But the kids, I don't know if it was back then, the climate, that it was hard to tell a parent. I know maybe their father, he was, you know, more the old school, but he quickly, you know, accepted it. And I'll tell you what really got him convinced later on when we talk about PFLAG. But anyway, so then Jenny, later she tried to tell me she was living at home and working at Safeway. And so I always talked to her in the evening and by bedside, and we always had our talk in the evening. And she said, you know, I think I'm gay. And I said, really? And I just tightened up. I just had no idea. And I actually couldn't talk to her about it. I'm not proud of that, but I just kind of thought, oh, okay, well, we'll talk about it later. And I left the room and I tightened up, and all of a sudden my back hurt. It physically, you know, tightened me up. But, and I didn't talk to her about it for a long time afterwards. And she was going to a Christian counselor. And luckily that Christian counselor said, don't hear those passages that you hear in the Bible, you know, you hear what Jesus said about accepting and loving everybody, and love God, love yourself, and love others. So luckily she got good advice from her counselor. Mm-hmm. And by the time we had a talk, she was really good about talking about everything. And I sat and talked to her about it, and got over it, you know.
Yeah, I'm just curious, when you said you tightened up, we're curious to know what that was like for you. Can you kind of describe it?
I don't know why it was harder to accept with a daughter than a boy, you know, with our sons. Maybe because I had no inkling of Jenny. You know, my oldest son and Jenny could pass for being straight. And you think of one thing of your daughter, and all of a sudden, boom, it's totally different. And it's just, I think I was worried for her too. So, I mean, I was really worried about her, you know, in the world that it was at that time. It was not as open as it is right now. So.
Mm-hmm. So you were worried for her safety, or what were you worried for?
For adjusting to being prejudiced against.
Uh huh.
So I don't know.
You seem like you're more protective of your daughter.
Oh yeah, very much so. We're very, very close, and actually this brought me closer. And then PFLAG, we used to say, actually, we're blessed to have a gay child because it opens up your heart and it teaches you to love unconditionally and stop judging others, you know. So we feel like we were lucky, fortunate. And honestly, the boys, they're so much fun and they're so conversational, and Ginny too. And we have such a good time. So, and my straight son is very conversational too. So I don't want to leave him out that way, but because we all have a good time, you know. But anyway, that's the story of them coming out.
Well, wait, you mentioned Dennis and Ginny, but what about your and Keith, but what about your fourth child?
Gayson.
That was Hal, who came home from college and couldn't talk to me about it. Mm-hmm. Dennis kind of hinted about Hal, so eventually I talked to Hal about it. And it took him a long, long time, and it's been more difficult for him than the others. But right now, he's in a good place. So,
is he the oldest? Is she?
Yes, he's the oldest. And he has always strove for perfection. And that's just one thing he had no control over. You know, he always had good grades. He always dressed well and had meaningful friends and so forth. But he couldn't control that he was gay. And to him, he had a hard time getting over the prejudice of himself, you know, so it was hard for a while.
As a parent, how do you support your child when you know they're in pain like that?
Just try to, luckily, I mean, he had the support of his brother and sister. That was a large part too. But just knowing that, I mean, I showed him lots of love just and support that way, you know, just supported everything he did and that he would feel good about himself. And I mean, he's got a lot of talents. He's artistic. He plays the bagpipe and he's very good at it, and plays for weddings and funerals and parties and in a band. And so that's a big part of his life. And thank goodness he has the music to be a big part, because it's a fulfillment for him.
I've never known anyone who plays bagpipes.
Oh, yeah.
I'm curious how he, how old was he when he picked that up, and how did he get introduced to it?
Well, my brother-in-law threw out some bagpipe records. He picked them up, and I didn't realize he was playing it, but when we went to parades and he would see the Sonoma County Bagpipe Band at the Rose Parade, he was so interested and seemed excited. And I said to him, "Would you like to play?" And he said, "Yes." And so I contacted someone in the band, and the Sonoma County Sheriff's Band, and they started to teach him. And that person said, "You know, there's a man who is the leader of this, the Prince Charles Band in San Francisco, the youth band, and he works in Santa Rosa. So maybe he could take over. And I've taken you as far as I can go. And maybe he could teach you more." So every Friday night, we drove down to the Presidio and he would play with the band there. But he also had lessons here in Santa Rosa. The teacher was a Sonoma County court recorder. So after he was through with work, he gave Hal his bagpipe lesson. And then we would go down on Friday nights and play with the band.
I mean, if that's not support for a parent to see what makes a child, you know, what turns a child on, and for that parent to ask, "Would you like to play that?" I mean, how old was he when you asked that question, when he started lessons?
He was about 12, and then we started lessons about age 12. And it just grew from there, and he's given a few lessons himself, and he's still in the band.
That's fabulous, Lucy. Seriously, because I'm a musician, I guess, but just for you to support him just like that, I mean, you build up that kind of trust where at some point he's going to talk to you about being gay, you know?
Oh, yeah. And, you know, it was some years later that we all, you know, make the jokes about it and the humor about about all of that. So it's been really good. He's gotten over that.
So Lucy, I'm thinking about school age and teenagehood and all of that for your kids. And I'm wondering, did they face any difficulty that you had to go through something with them, like with the schools around their coming out or being gay or?
Well, my oldest said, you know, he would get bullied a little bit. And I didn't know that until they're all grown. They're telling me these stories, you know, that how it was sometimes a little tough in school. Dennis and Jenny belonged to the band. So they were like a group of friends that were supporting each other no matter what. And so they had that group of friends at high school that they could glob on to. And so the kids are all into music. So that always helped.
Yeah. Are you into music, you and your husband?
Well, Harold, my husband, played the accordion. He doesn't anymore. He had to sell his accordion when he was in college for books. And I took piano lessons. So I play the piano. But I haven't played in a long time. I just got away from it. But I had all of the children take piano lessons for 2 years, and then they could take it from whatever they wanted to do. Jenny, my daughter, she's the last one. There's three boys and then a girl. She writes music, and she plays the piano beautifully. So
that's wonderful.
Nice to see that she's gone on with it. And yeah. Dennis plays the piano, and he's very musical. Mm-hmm. He's been in musicals in high school.
And speaking of music, it is time for our music break.
Okay.
And you brought a song with you. So could you introduce the song and then we will play it?
Oh, okay. It's by Garth Brooks. Not a lot of people know that Garth Brooks's sister is gay. And but this one isn't because his sister is gay. It's just a nice song about making someone feel your love. It's called To Make You Feel My Love. And part of the lyrics is, when the evening shadows and the stars appear, and there is no one to dry your tears, I could hold you for a million years to make you feel my love. That's how I feel about my children. I could hold them for a million years to make them feel my love.
When the rain's blowing in your face and the whole world is on your case, I would offer you a warm embrace to make you feel my love. When the evening shadows and the stars appear, there is no one to dry your tears, I could hold you for a million years to make you feel my love. I know you haven't made your mind up yet, but I would never do you wrong. I've known it from the moment that we met, so no doubt in my mind where you belong. I go hungry, I go black and blue, I go crawling down the avenue. There ain't nothing that I would make you feel my love. Storms are raging on a rolling sea, and down the highway of regret, the winds of change are blowing wild and free. You ain't seen nothing like me yet. There ain't nothing that I wouldn't do. Go to the ends of the earth for you. Make you happy, make your dreams come true. Make you feel my love.
Just joined us. This is Living Proof with Diana and Sheridan. And in studio, we have Lucy Wilkes, mother of our last month's guests, Jenny and Dennis. That song was by Garth Brooks, To Make You Feel My Love.
Lucy, we left off talking about what your kids were dealing with in school, but you didn't know about it. And we do this radio show and we talk to people, LGBT people, all the time. And that's one thing. It's really sad where so many kids are not able to talk to their parents. And you said very clearly that you're open to hearing what they had to say, but then for some reason they couldn't speak to you. And I'm curious to know about, how did you talk to your family and friends about your children, knowing that you had three gay children?
Well, I don't know why it was easy with my parents, because my parents have never been prejudiced. They've never been prejudiced about anything. So they were really good. They're very supportive. My sisters were very supportive. Our family was open-minded. And so that, you know, we weren't raised in a religion that was strict, and we weren't that closed about everything. So it seemed like it was natural to talk to them about it. Mm. And different friends, there's just one friend that said, "Oh, I'm so sorry." And I thought, no, you don't have to be sorry. it's been fine. It's been really good, actually. So the friends that we have are really true friends. And so they have been good about it. In fact, I think it really has helped a lot of them understand. And my older sister that lives in Tennessee now, she just moved there 2 years ago from Sacramento. But she had a son that was a little bit more conservative. But he came around, and in fact, he would visit with Hal in San Francisco in his flat there, and it's near the Castro, right?
Yeah, yeah. Uh-huh.
So anyway, we were all three walking around and had something to eat, and Scott, my nephew, who I was talking about, said, "Oh, this is kind of neat." He says, "That guy over there kind of made a pass at me, you know." And he was just joking around. But so he was completely fine. It really, like I said, it opened up a lot of people that we've known that may have had a different view. It kind of put a normalcy around if our family is like that, well, it must be okay, you know.
So I'm curious about the hard times. So did the hard times lead you to be a part of PFLAG? So what's the journey toward PFLAG? I'm curious.
I started going to PFLAG in Santa Rosa. I just thought I was wanting to connect to other parents and just kind of have that experience of sharing your stories and so forth. And around that time, we moved. I was there for a few years at PFLAG Santa Rosa. And then we moved to Oklahoma in 1994. And I looked around to see if there was a PFLAG in Stillwater because it's a college town. And there wasn't. There was a community AIDS network. So I asked the person in charge of the network if they knew of any PFLAG, and they said no. But then not too long after, I got a letter in the mail, and evidently a woman and her husband in the community got a list of people that lived in the area that belonged to PFLAG, and she anonymously sent out letters to all of us that knew that we were members of PFLAG to ask if we would like to join in starting one. So there were several of us that wrote back a positive, yes, we would like to do that. I've been wanting to do that, especially in Oklahoma when there's probably more of a need than here in California, you know. So there was two other couples and a librarian, a woman who was a librarian, and she at the library there in Stillwater, she had a brother that was gay. So we started PFLAG in Stillwater in our homes. Mm-hmm. And the leader that sent out the letter, she kind of set the groundwork. She started to advertise in the paper our group. And pretty soon we were growing and we had to not meet in homes anymore. We had to go to a bigger place, which the Methodist minister, I was Methodist and someone else was Methodist. We approached him about a room in the church. He was good with that. So we had, it was called the parlor room. It was upstairs and it had a fireplace and couch and chairs and like a little dining area. It kind of looked like a home and it was real inviting. And so we had our meetings there and it grew to be about, you know, 15 people coming. And some were professors from the college. Some were students. But we did bring in a lot of parents that became the core group. We have friends that were very supportive, the Littlefields. And Larry would go with me and another woman to the Capitol, to the Oklahoma State Capitol in Oklahoma City, and we'd lobby the politicians and sit down and talk with them. And some of the politicians said, you know, I understand, I know where you're coming from, but I can't support these bills because my constituents, I couldn't go home and face them. And I thought, oh, okay. So, you know, there was one other man, a man of color that was really brave, and he used to come out in support of gay issues. But other than that, and a lot of our lobbying wasn't to pass bills to support, it was to vote against prejudice bills, you know, bills that were going to harm people more than anything. And so and there's one story of we used to go regularly. And luckily, there was a Methodist minister she was from a town outside of Stillwater, and she was a Methodist minister. So she would come along and address if anyone had any religious issue. And so one time I thought, you know, the secretaries are so friendly and they're so nice that we could leave our literature, even if they're politicians, representatives aren't there. So we brought cookies one time and put cookies along with the literature, the secretaries to be given. And we did that at one desk and we walked out to the hallway and started leaving to the next place. And this woman comes darting out with our literature and the cookies. And she said, I don't want any of this. I don't want you to come in my office. So anyway, she was the politician. But the secretaries were really good. But that was just one incident. But most everyone was very cordial and very nice.
What was your reaction to the politician who was so anti-gay, obviously?
Oh, I just said, okay, and took the cookies. And then we just kind of laughed about it. I mean, it was sort of absurd. You just kind of go on your way and don't give more power to it than it deserves.
Wow, your kids must be very, very proud of you. Happy that you're their mama.
I think it made them feel good that we participated. They really saw when we went to parades and when they saw us take pictures, and someone took a picture of us in the parade and my husband was holding up a sign, I love my gay son. Well, my sons just love that. The parades, it's amazing how many people would come out for the parades. We had an Oklahoma City parade and there was a Tulsa parade. It was the gay pride parade. So we had one of our members, Larry and Julie, had a convertible that we would dress up and decorate. And that was our P flag. And then we would walk along, you know, it was very hot. It was over 100 degrees sometimes in Oklahoma because it was in June. But anyway, at the end of these parades, there were hundreds and hundreds of people that came out. It's like we didn't know that the gay community there was so large, but it was. Each big city had their own center, their own gay and lesbian, bisexual, transgendered center. So at least they had that. Like I said, the leader started things like at our meetings, we went around and told our story, but we'd also have a Halloween party at Halloween time when we dress as a gay character. And that was a lot of fun. And we'd have a prize for the one that was, we thought, the best.
Wow. That's creative. What did you dress as? Who?
Oh, I dressed as Marguerite Kammermeier one time. She was the colonel in the army that wasn't promoted because she was honest and answered their question if she was gay.
She
wrote a book, Serving in Silence. Very good. Very good book. And I'm trying to think what else I dressed as. There was Harvey Milk. You know, someone had a milk mustache.
Very creative.
The tennis stars, you know, that are gay. And, oh, gosh, I can't think of. But there was some real creative people there. So we had a lot of fun with that. Also, we had spiritual panels. We'd ask PFLAG as ministers in town, and it's amazing how many ministers are supportive. We had someone from the Methodist, the Presbyterian, the Lutheran, the Quaker, and the Unitarian Church go to OSU and give a talk about spirituality and homosexuality, and they were very good. And one time a news person was there and quoted some of them and they got kind of in trouble with their congregation. You know, in fact, one was prone to be so supportive. They brought somebody to their church service that was gay to give a talk. But that person was very flamboyant and walked around the congregation and kind of admonished everybody. The minister got in trouble and pretty soon he was transferred. But the next minister was just as supportive. He was just more careful and we still had our meetings there and we advertised that it was at the church, our meetings. So that was good. We also had a booth that Oklahoma State University had what was called at the beginning of the school year, Lights on Stillwater. And it was all the businesses and clubs and organizations that had their booth to welcome the new students into what is available there in Stillwater and OSU. So we had the PFLAG booth, and we had a lot of materials, and we also had a box that you could put your name in and there'd be a drawing and you'd win a $50 gift certificate from the bookstore, the local bookstore. So, and then candy, and it would bring people over. And one time this man came along with his two children. They were about 8 and 10. And they came over and got candy. And then he kind of smiled at them, but he looked at our booth and they started reading it. And he had the children bring the candy back. Isn't that just reminds me of the politician that did that? But so we laughed about that. But anyway, but there were people that were thanking us for that booth, and some students that came over and started to talk. And we always had our Methodist minister there. We always had our professor there. And so to answer questions. So that was very, very powerful. But what was more powerful was when we went about three or four of us, mostly just three at a time. And there was about four or five of us that would take turns going to class at OSU. The teachers that taught the YMCA and city recreation regarding leisure and recreation, counseling classes, things like that, we were invited by a few teachers to come and do a panel. So three of us would be at the front and we would tell our stories, our individual stories. And that was very compelling to some of the students, because just to sit there and talk about our families, and then they could ask any question, really opened up the conversation. Because in there, you know, in colleges, and especially in Oklahoma, that you need to have the conversation. Mm-hmm. One professor said that he said he got so many people that came up afterwards and said that was the best panel, you know, for really bringing to light what families look like and so forth. So, and one of the times we had the panel with my friend Larry and my friend Wilma, one of the students raised his hand, and I saw, my folks took us to all the basketball games and football games. They got tickets for my husband and I. So I knew the student when he raised his hand, and he was a very popular basketball player. And I thought, oh, I wonder what he's going to ask. And he said, did this bring your family closer together? Because when my cousin came out, it made our family closer together. And I thought, oh, good. And I said, yes, it did, actually. It brought our family closer together. And so there's a lot of positive things that came out of those panels at the school.
Thank you so much for your service and all that you did with PFLAG.
It was so wonderful to have the opportunity. I was so happy to be involved in that, because it was something we felt passionate about. And when my husband heard at one of our meetings a student tell his story, that's when he was all in 100%. And this student was a student of color. And he said, in the Black family, you know, everyone sticks together when there's prejudice around them. They can stick together as a family. But when he told his mother, she couldn't accept that. Mm-hmm. So here he is. He doesn't have a home at home. He doesn't, you know, he doesn't feel comfortable outside. And anyway, it was a very moving story and sad. And so my husband thought, oh my gosh, what these people are going through. So
you have to deal with racism and now dealing with homophobia.
Yeah. Right. Mm. Exactly. So he started going that was earlier on. He started going every week. We had it, no, once a month. I'm sorry, not every week. We had once a month. So a couple of years ago, my sister and I, she's very supportive, lives here down the street from me. We went back to Oklahoma and I went to the meeting. I hadn't been to a meeting in 10 years. The Methodist minister took over the the leadership. I was a leader for 8 years when the original leader passed away. It was so nice to connect with some of the old faces again. They were very supportive. Our secretary was a secretary at the fire department at OSU, and they wrote manuals that were very popular across the country. Oklahoma State is very well known as a hub for teaching firefighting. So she wrote the manual, and she was our secretary. Our treasurer was the librarian. Anyway, and then sometimes I would get phone calls from people. They did want to come to a meeting, but they wanted to talk. So I would just go to coffee with them and chat. And that seemed to be another way to help other parents. So
you are so worldly as a parent with your children and as an activist. We are nearing the end of our interview with you, which is very sad because you have so many interesting stories to share. But we were wondering if there were some words of wisdom or advice or something that you would like to give to maybe parents out there or maybe kids who are struggling and coming out and telling their parents. Do you have any words of wisdom for folks out there who might be listening?
Well, of course, when they come out, maybe give yourself some time to process before you make any statements that might hurt somebody. Just take time to think it over. But I think what carries us all through is to take ourselves lightly, not too seriously, and to have humor. In our family, there's a lot of teasers, you know, and sometimes the teasing gets a little bit much. But if we take a time, what we get back to is rising above our differences with a little humor. It works as a balm over everything. So I would just say not to take yourself so seriously and try to understand what they're going through, how tough it was for them.
Mm-hmm. And so this is advice to parents, right?
Parents, yes, but for everyone, you know, find humor in your life. I think it just heals. Humor heals. I know I love to play cards, and my sister and I have a card group every month. And we laugh so much. And honestly, we feel like we could just rise above everything after we leave our card game. because we have so much fun. So
one more question about advice. I'm curious about you. You talk to parents about, you know, take a beat, take a moment, think about it so you don't hurt someone's feelings. That's fabulous. I'm wondering, is there something that you could say to kids who are struggling trying to tell their parents? What would you say to the kids who are struggling?
Well, just wait until you feel strong enough to understand that it takes a while for them to process. So it's all in a process. No one's reaction is going to be immediate as far as support. Like I said, though, my sons, I was fine with that. I had a little bit of time to process with Ginny because it was just a different way of thinking of her. But we are so close now, and my kids are such great kids. I can't say enough about them. I feel like, you know, you raise your children, you think you're going to be a positive and a powerful influence in their lives, and they end up being a positive and a powerful influence in your life. So just know that you could learn from them and they can learn from you. So
that is so beautiful.
Thank you. So beautiful.
Thank you so much for coming on to our show.
Sure.
Lucy, and helping us understand your life as a mom and as an activist and a little bit about your kids. And wow, just hearing Dennis and Ginny last month and now you, I mean, they are so lucky to have you as a mom.
Yeah.
Oh, thank you. I'm lucky to have them, really. Yeah. Truly, it's a blessing.
Thank you so much. We want you to remember that, like Lucy, you too can be living proof that sharing your passion and your creative expression, you can make our world a better world. This is Diana and Sheridan, and we will be back next month. Until then, good night.
I step out of the ordinary. I can feel my soul ascending. I'm on my way. Can't stop me now. And you can do the same.
We need a change, yeah. So do it today, yeah. 'Cause I can see a clear horizon.
Tune in next Sunday night for Outbeat Music with Cheryl Cabanuck. That's at 8 p.m. and only here on Radio 91. Remember, too, you can listen to most Outbeat radio programs on demand anytime after the original air date by visiting our website at outbeatradio.com. And we also encourage you to download the KRCB mobile app for your Apple or Android device. Staying in touch with the latest news from NPR is especially important during this health emergency. And all of us here at KRCB are working hard to keep you informed. Stay connected and listen to KRCB Radio 91 from anywhere in the world with internet access, free on this mobile app. On air, online, or on the go, we are Radio 91, KRCB-FM Windsor, and K215-CQ Santa Rosa, a service of Northern California Public Media. It's just before 9 p.m. Stay with us. Afropop is next.